So for the learners out there, especially those of you who follow the latest workflows at popularitytools.a, you know that like a developer's daily toolkit comes with this basic expectation of freedom.
Right, exactly. Freedom to just build.
Yeah, I mean, you write a script, you compile a binary, you run your tests, and you can run that loop 1,000 times if you want to. Your local CPU doesn't, send you an invoice at the end of the month for every cycle it
No,
executes.
because you own the local compute. You own the execution environment. And that freedom is, well, it's really fundamental to how software is traditionally built.
But the moment you step into the world of AI-assisted coding, right? Specifically running advanced terminal-based agents like Claude Code, that freedom just entirely
It's
vanishes.
gone.
Totally gone. Suddenly we're dealing with a daily workflow that is genuinely anxiety-inducing.
Yeah, it's the definition of metered anxiety. I mean, if you're a serious developer running something like Opus 4.7 or Sonnet 4.6 every day in your terminal, you are acutely aware of the cost of every single prompt.
Oh, absolutely. Every time you hit enter, it's like a tiny cash register rings in the back of your
Bye.
mind.
Ding, there goes another quarter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you start rationing your requests. Like you've got this massive multi-file refactor that the agent could totally handle, but you hesitate. You like manually do half the work yourself just to trim the context window down.
Which is crazy, right?
It is. You start treating your AI budget like this incredibly precious cargo. I mean, I've talked to developers who are dropping anywhere from $50 to $200 a month just on Anthropic API costs.
Which completely defeats the purpose of having an autonomous agent in the first place. I mean, if you're micromanaging the AI to save API credits, you are losing the productivity multiplier you're literally paying for.
You become a bottleneck to your own tools.
Exactly, you're the bottleneck.
Well, today's mission is about breaking that bottleneck. We are unpacking a highly specific, high-leverage setup guide. It was written by Wayne McDonald, an AI infrastructure lead, and he outlines a method to route a model called GLM 5.2 directly into Claude Code.
And this is huge.
It really is because it acts as a 5 times cheaper alternative to Opus. So the goal is to drop that monthly API bill from $200 down to the $10 to $30 range without losing the high-level agentic capability that we depend on.
Right, we're talking about a pricing asymmetry so massive that it fundamentally alters what behaviors you are willing to automate. But, you know, to understand how Wayne's setup actually holds up in a real development environment, we have to kind of less look under the hood of the engine making this happen.
Yeah, because before we even entertain the idea of replacing a premium frontier model like Opus 4.7, we have to establish that the replacement isn't just some toy model, right? Like, we don't want something that's just going to hallucinate boilerplate code all day.
No, definitely not.
So we are dealing with GLM 5.2. This is Zippo AI's flagship open source language model released mid-2026. And it is a heavyweight. We are talking 756 billion parameters.
Yeah, and just to put that in perspective for a second, that is not a model you're running locally on your MacBook Pro.
Definitely not.
No matter how much unified memory you paid Apple for, it's just not happening.
Not a chance. But it achieves a usable inference speed through a mixture of experts or MoE architecture. Plus, it sports a 128K extendable context window.
Which is absolute table stakes if you want an agent to swallow a medium-sized code base.
Right. And the crucial detail here, the really big one, is that the weights are entirely open. I mean, anyone can go to Hugging Face, specifically the zai.org/glm-5-2 repository or ModelScope, and just download the full model right now.
Yeah, the open weights are key. But that MoE architecture, the mixture of experts, that's the technical key to why this model is economically viable at all.
Yeah, think of that massive 756 billion parameter count, like a colossal kitchen with 756 chefs. You have specialists for every conceivable type of cuisine.
I like this analogy.
Right. But when a customer orders a specific dish, say a really complex plate of pasta, the entire kitchen doesn't start cooking. The router network inside the model analyzes the request and only activates the specific experts required.
So just the pasta boiler and the sauce specialist fire up.
Exactly. The pastry chef and the grill master stay completely idle. They consume zero compute.
So you get the incredible menu variety of a mega restaurant, but the inference speed and really the energy footprint of a food truck.
Yes.
Only the relevant parameter slices activate for any given token generation. and that's what allows it to reason deeply about complex coding paradigms without the latency that a dense 700 billion parameter model would typically suffer from.
But, you know, even with that food truck efficiency during inference, you still have to own the mega restaurant to house all those chefs in the first place.
Right, and that's the hardware reality. Loading a model of that size into memory, even before you start generating a single token, it requires serious silicon.
We're talking big racks.
Oh, yeah. At full weight, you are looking at 8 A100 or H100 GPUs running in parallel just to hold the model.
And even if we aggressively quantize it, you know, compressing those weights to save memory, it's still just a massive lift for a solo developer or a small team.
For the vast majority of developers, self-hosting that cluster is completely out of reach, both financially and logistically. I mean, you'd spend more on AWS GPU instances in a single day than you'd save on Claude API credits in a year.
Which is usually the exact brick wall we hit with open source models. The capability is there, but the operational friction just kills it.
Totally.
Like, nobody wants to spend their entire weekend writing custom Python shims and debugging GPU memory leaks just so their coding assistant can boot up. I mean, we want to write our product code, not babysit the AI's infrastructure.
Exactly. And that hardware barrier, that sets up the genius of the integration layer Wayne McDonald lays out. He basically bypasses the hardware problem entirely.
Right. He uses the Z.AI API gateway. So Z.AI is hosting GLM 5.2 on their own massive GPU clusters, and they expose it through an endpoint that is supposedly 100% Anthropic API compatible.
And that compatible plane, that is the linchpin of this entire setup.
Okay, wait, hold on. I got to push back here because I don't buy that API compatible claim at face value.
Fair enough.
We've all been burned by leaky abstractions before. Usually when a provider says their open weight model is API compatible with Anthropic or OpenAI, it just means basic text generation works. You send a string of text, you get a string of text back.
Right. This simple stuff.
Yeah. But the minute Claude Code actually tries to use a tool like reading a dependency graph or formatting a surgical multi-file edit using bash commands, the whole integration just crashes. The AI outputs a JSON bracket where an XML tag should be, the terminal throws an error, and the loop dies.
It's super frustrating.
So are you really saying this gateway handles native Claude agent loops without any prompt hacking?
I know, it's a totally valid skepticism. Tool calling syntax is incredibly brittle. Claude Code expects the model to output very specific structures to trigger its internal tool chain. But yeah, Z.AI handles it natively.
Wow.
The gateway layer isn't just passing text back and forth. It perfectly mimics the Anthropic request and response format, including all those intricate XML tool use tags.
So the core Claude Code tool chain, I'm talking bash execution, the read tool, edit, write, grep, glob, even dispatching subagents, that all just works out of the box.
Without a single custom shim. The model navigates JS doc, it analyzes change logs, it executes code base wide, edits completely natively.
Yeah.
You are simply pointing your local environment variables at a different server endpoint.
That's it.
That's it. GLM 5.2 receives the exact system prompt that Anthropic designed for Claude Code. It understands the tool descriptions perfectly, and it replies in the exact dialect the terminal expects.
That is wild. Wayne breaks this down into a four-step setup, and it genuinely looks like it takes about 90 seconds.
And the simplicity is really what makes this a practical daily driver rather than, you know, a weekend science project.
All right, let's walk through the actual setup for everyone. Step one, you grab a Z.AI API key from their dashboard. It's just a standard bearer token.
Yep, super easy.
Step two, in the root directory of your current software project, you create a local settings file. Specifically, it needs to be named .claude/settings.local.json.
And we really cannot stress this enough. Make sure your .gidignore file includes that .claude directory.
Yes, good call. Do not commit this file to your public GitHub repo. The absolute last thing you want is a web scraper finding your API keys and racking up a massive bill on your behalf.
Exactly. Once that file is safely gitignored, we get to step three, which is the actual swap.
Right. So in that JSON file, you set the Anthropic _base_URL to point to the Z.AI endpoint URL. Then you clear out the Anthropic _API_key. Literally just leave it as an empty string.
Right. Because you definitely don't want it falling back to your expensive Anthropic account by accident.
Yeah. That would defeat the whole purpose. So instead, you input your new Z_AI_API_key.
And there is one vital configuration detail in this JSON file regarding timeouts that developers frequently overlook.
Oh, right. The ATI _timeout_MS setting Wayne says you need to crank this up to 3 million milliseconds, which is exactly 50 minutes.
Which sounds insane, right? If you're used to snappy web chat interfaces, a 50-minute timeout sounds like a bug. But in the context of Claude Code, it's actually a critical feature.
Why does it need that much time?
Because of what the agent is actually doing under the hood. When you kick off a long agentic loop where the AI is, you know, reading 5 different files, mapping out a plan, writing the new code, executing your unit test, reading the error logs, and then looping back to fix its own mistakes, that takes time.
Yeah, that's a lot of processing.
And it's doing this while managing a 128K context window.
So it's essentially holding the entire state of the code base in its short-term memory.
Yeah. Exactly. ZDot AI's inference speed is really impressive. But processing those massive, heavily loaded context windows over and over during a complex loop, it can sometimes take longer than Anthropic's hosted frontier endpoints.
Makes sense.
You do not want your terminal timing out and severing the connection 20 minutes into a brilliant multi-file refactor just because the gateway needed an extra 5 seconds to process the attention mechanism.
No, that would be brutal. You got to give the agent the runway it needs to finish the job. So step 4, you just restart your Claude Code terminal session. And that's it. That's the whole 90-second illusion.
You're now running an open-weight 756 billion parameter model wrapped in a premium Anthropic interface.
But now we have to look at the cold, hard math. Because we know it connects, but we really need to assess where this model falls short. Like we always say, there is no free lunch in AI engineering.
No, there isn't. And the math is where this transitions from just a neat infrastructure trick to a fundamental shift in how you work. Let's look at the baseline economics. Using GLM 5.2 via the ZDot AI gateway costs 40 cents per million input tokens and $1.60 per million output tokens.
Okay, 40 cents input, $1.60 output.
Now compare that to the model you are likely replacing, which is Opus 4.7. Opus runs $15 for input and $75 for output.
That is just a staggering difference. I mean, we are talking about a 37 to 47 times raw price gap, depending on your input to output ratio.
Let's put that into real world developer terms to see the actual impact.
Okay, let's say you're doing a standard meaty coding session. You're refactoring an authentication module and having the agent generate a comprehensive suite of unit tests. That session generates roughly 30,000 output tokens. On Opus 4.7, that single terminal session costs you $2.25.
Which is exactly why you hesitate before pressing enter. $2 here, $3 there. It adds up to hundreds of dollars a month very, very quickly.
But that exact same 30,000 output token session, executing the exact same tool calls on GLM 5.2, it costs 4.8 cents in output, plus maybe another 4 cents for the input context. You are looking at roughly 9 cents all in.
Wow.
9 cents versus $2.25.
And the scale of that saving changes behavior. If you run 10 of those complex sessions a day, your daily burn is 90 cents instead of $22. That scales to maybe $27 a month versus nearly $700 a month for a heavy user on Opus.
But like we said, no free lunch. We have to look at the benchmarks to see what capability we're actually trading away for that massive discount. Wayne outlines this in what he calls the SWE bench catch.
Right. And if you look at pure reasoning tasks, GLM 5.2 holds its own beautifully against the frontier models. On Human Evil, which tests basic Python coding functions, it scores 91% versus Opus's 94%.
Pretty close.
And on the MLU benchmark, testing massive multitask language understanding, it's 88% versus 91%. That is just a 3-point gap.
Yeah, and in day-to-day coding, a 3-point gap is basically noise. You wouldn't even notice it. But then you hit SWE Bench Verified, and SWE Bench is really the gold standard for what we are doing here.
It absolutely is.
It specifically tests an agent's ability to autonomously resolve real-world GitHub issues within a full, complex repository. It is the most direct proxy for Claude Code's actual use case.
And on SWE Bench Verified, GLM 5.2 scores 62% against Opus 4.7, 71%.
Okay, that is a glaring 9-point gap. And we need to pause here because, wait, isn't a 9-point drop on the exact benchmark that simulates real software engineering a complete deal breaker? I mean, why would I want a model that fails almost 40% of the time on real GitHub issues?
I get that reaction. But it's because of what actually happens inside a failed SW bench run. The 9-point gap is entirely real, and it tells us exactly where GLM 5.2 hits its limits.
Okay, where does it fail?
If you are running complex multi-step reasoning where every single step relies on the previous one being flawless, like proving program correctness, or deriving a completely novel algorithm from scratch, you still need Opus 4.7.
So it's more about endurance over long contexts.
Precisely.
Hmm.
When an agent enters a 50-plus turn loop, you know, it makes a plan, edits a file, runs a test, sees an error, adjusts the plan, edits again. It has to maintain a coherent mental model of its original goal.
Right.
By turn 30, lesser models experience plan coherence loss. They literally forget the overarching architectural constraints and start just whacking at bugs randomly.
Yeah.
Opus maintains that coherent thread much better over very long adversarial contexts.
Okay, so if I'm building a brand new physics engine from scratch, I use Opus. But when do I use the 62% model?
You use it for the other 80% of your daily feature work. Because SW Bench measures zero shot or limited turn success. It doesn't capture the hidden variable of iteration cost.
The cost to just try again.
Yes. When a model costs you 9 cents instead of $2, you don't need it to be a flawless genius on the first try. You can afford to run extra verification passes. You can just ask it to double check its own logic.
Run the test suite 3 times if you want.
Exactly. That cheap iterative verification offsets the benchmark gap almost entirely for standard mundane tasks like, you know, refactoring React components, writing documentation, or drafting API endpoints.
So you're trading a slight drop in base intelligence for the economic freedom to just iterate endlessly. And that economic freedom unlocks what Wayne McDonald describes as the most exciting part of this entire setup. This is the killer workflow.
Yeah, the true value of a 9-cent coding session isn't just saving money at the end of the month. It fundamentally changes the architecture of how you ask the AI to solve problems.
Wayne calls this storm research. It's the practice of fanning out 8 to 10 parallel subagents to explore a code base simultaneously rather than sequentially.
Think about how a developer normally uses Claude Code. You ask it a question, it reads a file, then it decides to read another file. Then it searches for a variable. It's a very linear, sequential process.
It's like hiring one incredibly brilliant but exorbitant detective to slowly, methodically dust an entire crime scene room by room. It works, but it takes forever.
Great analogy.
Storm research flips that entirely. Instead of one expensive detective, you are hiring an entire SWAT team to canvass the whole city block all at once for pennies on the dollar.
Right, the wall clock time for the developer is exactly the same, but the information density you get back in that time frame is 10 times higher.
Let's look at what that 10-agent SWAT team actually does in practice, because the division of labor is brilliant. You spawn the swarm, agents 1 and 2 dive straight into the module and start building a comprehensive dependency map.
And while they are mapping dependencies, agents 3 and 4 are executing global reject searches across the entire code base to find every single caller of the functions you are about to modify.
Simultaneously, agents 5 and 6 are scanning your test files. They are identifying coverage gaps related to your new feature and literally drafting the scaffolding for new test cases.
And agents 7 and 8 aren't even looking at your code. They are out on the open web, researching the external third-party API docs and pulling the latest change logs to ensure your integration is using the most current endpoints.
And finally, agents 9 and 10 are gripping through your Git history. They're looking at previous commit logs for error patterns and seeing how similar refactors were handled in the past.
And all of this happens at the exact same time.
Yeah.
But here is a critical technical trap you need to avoid if you want to run this workflow.
Oh, right. The environment variable.
Yes. You must remember to set the Claude_code_subagent_model_environment variable in your configuration file.
Because if you don't explicitly tell Claude Code to route the subagents to GLM 5.2, the orchestrator agent will just default back to spawning Anthropic models.
Yep.
So your cheap SWAT team will suddenly be staffed by 10 Opus-level detectives, and your API bill for that one single prompt will skyrocket to $30.
And you'll be very unhappy. You have to ensure the subagents are routed to the cheap open weights. But when it's configured correctly, the magic really happens when the orchestrator agent collects all these parallel streams of intelligence.
But how does the orchestrator not just get totally overwhelmed and hallucinate from all that conflicting data coming in at once?
Well, because of the 128K context window, the orchestrator agent absorbs the dependency map, the caller list, the external docs, and the Git history all at once.
It just swallows it all.
Yeah, it synthesizes that massive context payload and outputs a highly informed, flawless refactor plan. You're basically overwhelming the problem with cheap parallel compute.
Which points to a much deeper philosophical shift happening in the AI landscape right now. This ability to spin up an army of agents on the cheap, it signals a transition in how we interact with AI models as a fundamental asset class. We're moving from a mental model of renters to owners.
The renters versus owners framing is absolutely vital for understanding where the industry is heading.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the last few years, almost every developer has been a renter.
You pay for API access to closed source proprietary models. You rent GPT-4o, you rent Gemini, you rent Opus.
And the benefit of renting is zero infrastructure overhead. You get state-of-the-art capability at various price tiers without ever touching a server, but the trade-off is massive provider lock-in.
You are entirely at the mercy of their ecosystem. You face unannounced model deprecations where the API you literally rely on just disappears.
It happens all the time.
You deal with changing terms of service, and you have absolutely zero leverage against their pricing power. If Anthropic doubles the price of Opus tomorrow, you just have to pay it or rewrite your entire tool chain.
Exactly. Whereas owners utilize open weight models. You control the weights, you completely avoid lock-in, and you dictate the economics of your compute.
But the historical problem was that earlier open weight models, think of the older generations of Llama or Mistral, they were materially behind the closed frontier models.
Right. You had ownership, but you owned a much worse asset.
Yeah.
It just couldn't handle complex agentic loops.
Which is exactly why GLM 5.2 is such a milestone. Wayne's guide highlights this as the first open weight model that makes the owner mindset truly credible at near flagship levels. It comfortably handles the agentic workload that used to require a closed API. But let me ask a practical question regarding this ownership concept.
Right.
If I am using Z.ai's API gateway to access GLM 5.2, I'm still paying them per token, right? I don't physically have the model on my hard drive. So aren't I still technically renting? Why does Wayne consider this owning?
That is a really great distinction to make. By using the Z.ai gateway, you're absolutely getting the convenience of a renter. You don't have to manage a fleet of H100 GPUs or figure out how to quantize 756 billion parameters.
Right.
But because the underlying weights of GLM 5.2 are open and freely downloadable, you hold the strategic leverage of an owner.
Ah, the leverage is the key.
If Z.ai decides to double their API prices tomorrow, or if they pivot their business model, or if the company completely goes under, your workflow does not die. You can literally go to Hugging Face, download the zai.org/glm-5-28s, and self-host them on AWS.
Or you can just instantly move to another third-party provider hosting those exact same open weights.
Exactly. Your prompts won't break. The tool calling syntax remains identical. Your highly tuned sub-agent swarm won't suddenly behave differently. You have complete optionality.
You have an escape hatch that fundamentally does not exist when you build your infrastructure entirely around Opus or GPT-4o. It changes the power dynamic between developer and provider entirely.
It really does.
So what does this actually mean for your workflow today? We have a very clear mandate based on Wayne McDonald's guide. Go into your current project. Create that .cloud/settings.local.json file. Set up the Z.ai routing and point it at GLM 5.2.
And just run this open weight setup as your default for one single week on your standard everyday feature work.
Treat it as an active experiment. Monitor your terminal. See if the actual quality of your output drops in any meaningful way, or if it's just your monthly API bill that plummets.
And remember, you aren't burning your bridges here.
Yeah.
Wayne explicitly suggests keeping a backup configuration file, call it .json.opus, ready in your project directory.
Right, so when you inevitably hit that 50-turn brick wall where the open model loses planned coherence, or you need some crazy novel algorithm derived from scratch, you can hot swap back to Opus in 10 seconds.
Yeah, you deploy the cheap 10-agent swarm for the 80% of your daily grind, and you bring in the expensive frontier genius for the 20% that requires deep, unbroken reasoning.
It is the most rational, economically sound way to deploy capital and compute within a code base right now.
It really is.
And that leads to a final thought we want to leave you with. Building on this entire concept of storm research, if we are truly entering an era where running 10 parallel subagents to scour a code base, analyze dependencies, and write tests costs literal pennies, how long until human developers stop writing syntax entirely and instead just write agent orchestrations?
It's a profound architectural question. What happens to the very nature of software design when a code base is explicitly built to be navigated by swarms of cheap AI agents rather than human eyes?
I mean, do we even need human-readable folder structures or beautifully commented modules, if a swarm of 50 microagents can build a perfect real-time dependency map in 3 seconds flat.
Probably not.
The whole paradigm of how we structure logic might shift from human maintainability to agent navigability. But, you know, until that paradigm shift fully arrives, we still have to manage our cloud bills today. So go set up that 90-second integration. Stop treating your AI prompts like precious ration cargo and start unleashing the swarm.
Thanks for diving into the architecture with us.
Catch you on the next deep dive.